We discuss the short and long-term ramifications of Joel Embiid's latest knee injury, all-star snubs, and Jalen Brunson's rise, plus many a shout-out to Tony Snell and his family. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends! Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. Joining me as always, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, it is my man, it is your man, it is everyone's man, he is Dan Devine. What is up?
Jake, I am thrilled to be coming to you from a well-lit bedroom. You are coming to me from someplace different today. Where are you in this world?
Yeah, if you're tuning into our YouTube programming after my fun Coachella-style NBA shirt with every single team logo on it, I regret to inform you, as you're seeing, that I'm in a very, very dark, undisclosed hotel room location, which is definitely the darkest hotel room I've ever been in the time of my traveling the NBA landscape. So we're going to make it work, but our audio sounds delightful. Dan looks beautiful in his home lighting. So
thank you so much.
Let's keep that positive radiating light going throughout this episode, because I think we're in some pretty good spirits here. We had some fun with the setup, figuring out. I tried to put it on a nightstand and that didn't work out. And we were on the bed and Dan was talking about me doing like photo album cover shoots and whatnot. So
yeah, I was going to have, we're going to have to paint Jake like one of our French girls. That's what we're going to have to do with getting the lighting just right in that hotel room. So yeah, the vibes are weird, but I think in a positive direction, the arrow's pointing up. Maybe not quite so much though in the city of brotherly love. Jake, you want to lead us there?
Yeah. So obviously Joel Embiid's health concerns have been a thing throughout his rise to the top, even when he started at the bottom, missed his two seasons. His first two seasons was training back, was dunking on Nerlens Noel and calling him the P word in practice, according to reporting for a book called Built to Lose. And then he broke his foot, and then the Sixers drafted Jahlil Okafor, and fast forward to torn meniscuses and ankles and facial fractures. He now has another lateral meniscus injury, which I am pulling up the official team statement right now. An MRI following Tuesday's game and further evaluation over the past 24 hours, which ended at last night, Thursday. It revealed an injury to the lateral meniscus in Embiid's left knee. They are not calling this a tear, but let's just use our imagination. Embiid, it will be consulting with the Sixers medical staff and several leading specialists. He's out through the weekend while a treatment plan is finalized. I got a tip, Dan, on Wednesday night, the night before this came out, from someone around the situation who said, hey, Embiid's going to be out through the All-Star break. The Sixers strongly denied that. They said nothing is official yet. They're still not saying that in this official statement. But recovery time, according to Jeff and Street Clothes, this is typically going to be a weeks, not days injury. And we are certainly just a couple weeks away from the All-Star break. So personally, I'm not reporting this. Personally, I expect Joel Embiid will not be playing again until after the festivities in Indianapolis. I'd be shocked if he's out there. So we'll talk about the ramifications of all that. But first, Dan, what is your instant reaction and any thoughts about who was definitely the leading MVP candidate so far this season? He's going to be on the shelf here for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I thought of was I had to do like the midseason awards column and do all the evaluation of the different cases for the players. And I wound up choosing Embiid as the MVP of the first half of the season. And when I wrote it up, part of what I wrote was like, I want to make sure I'm giving him his flowers now, because we've already seen him miss a certain amount of games. It's possible that he might miss more and then wind up being ineligible for the year-end awards ballots, all NBA Defensive Player of the Year and MVP. So I kind of wanted to, salute what he's put in so far. And then unfortunately, shortly thereafter, there was the previous knee injury that had kept him out for several games, most notably the game against Nikola Jokic in Denver, which led to all sorts of chattering from bad places about whether Embiid was ducking people on the road and, you know, this is like soft behavior and maybe he's not really hurt. And then you see him, he misses the game in Portland, and then he comes out and just really does not look like himself at all against the Warriors before the Jonathan Kuminga falling on him, you know, takes him out of the game for good. And then now we're talking about another meniscus injury. That's the one that he suffered during his first full season. You mentioned he missed the first two seasons of his career with foot injuries. That first season that he played, he only got through, you know, 30-odd games, and then had the meniscus tear in January of 2017. Undergoes surgery for that. And like, the idea of having multiple injuries to the same part of your same knee, you know, separated by a handful or half dozen years as you know, are getting to age 30. Like, these are concerning things for Embiid. The immediate issue is obviously, like, the Sixers are trying to win a championship this year, and they just lost the MVP of the league for an undisclosed amount of time, you know, as yet undetermined amount of time. It's going to put an inordinate amount of pressure on Tyrese Maxey, who responded to that by putting up 51 last night to beat the Jazz. So, you know, the offense can be in good hands when he's on the floor. But if you have no Embiid, then there will be much more time where neither Embiid nor Maxey is on the floor. And where the hell do the Sixers turn for offense? Then that has been a season-long issue when they haven't had either one of those guys available. It'll be a persistent issue as long as Embiid is not available. Obviously, he's also the centerpiece of that defense. So you're also dealing with injuries to De'Anthony Melton and, you know, other guys that are in and out of the lineup. So there's just a lot. It's a cascading effect in Philadelphia. I mean, obviously, someone as central to everything you do as Joel Embiid, when he leaves, the ripple effects are far and wide. And in an East that's getting really, really congested in that those 2 through 6 spots, it could have massive ramifications on the Sixers' competitive opportunity this season.
So I don't know necessarily where Philly goes from here, being that it does seem like they are in such a evaluation period, as they're saying. However, without a doubt, I can tell you, no matter what they do, and I guess if we can use the, you know, proverbial, there's optimism about whatever, like, the Sixers people I've spoken to over the last 72 hours about all this, has, I guess, 48 hours, is all with the talk of, we need to make sure this, you know, the big man's healthy for the playoffs. So I don't want to speak out of turn, but just like, my early impressions is that there isn't really concern this is a season ending thing. I'll just throw that out there, because I think that's like the optimistic slant that is definitely, and that's just, again, me reading, that is not coming from Philly at all. That's just my standpoint from what I'm saying. So at least that's like a positive outlook to look on this. The other thing is, as I'm pulling up the schedule, not the biggest sample size, but the Sixers do have 3 more games here. Tomorrow, Saturday, versus Brooklyn. Then they host the Mavericks. Then they have Golden State next Wednesday. 3 games to continue to look at this Paul Reed, Mo Bamba reserve well that they've had in the front court behind him all season long. We saw Paul Reed do Paul Reed things. I saw the closed captioning, as it does, with Andrew Unterberger. I believe Andrew Unterberger was the one who captured Stas Castillo for Nick Stauskas way back when.
Shout out to Andrew
Unterberger. AU, get off my gold on Twitter. Purveyor of the 50 greatest things of the year. So Bible Paul did biblical things against Nikola Jokic in Denver. But also, you know, we've had moments where, I forgot exactly which game it was, so I apologize. I guess it was Sacramento, as I'm pulling up my notes, where Mo Bamba went off and did Mo Bamba things, and he had a great showing on Christmas, I believe, against Miami. So this is like a little sample size, a little stretch for Philly to look at what they have there before going after a, quote, like Kelly Olynyk type or any of the other reserve big men that are out there on the market, which does seem to be like a bit of a competitive landscape. I've talked about that a little bit, I think, on the show. You've written about it a little bit. You know, guys like Nick Richards, you know, Kelly Olynyk, definitely, like we just mentioned. Daniel Gafford, I think, is more of a top tier, pricier outcome that has future money that I wouldn't necessarily think Philly would be dying to go after, but who knows? And I mean, if you want to have a bigger conversation about like the future, what does this mean about Joel's health? Like, I know, and I have nothing to say about this because I'm no doctor, but like, there was definitely plenty of reaction online that I've seen of like, this guy's got to drop some weight, man. Like his body can't hold up. He's about to turn 30. Our producer, John Gennaro, put out that, you know, in our rundown here that he's going to be paid $59 million in 3 years, which is something that maybe could scare off teams like the Knicks and whoever, you know, like the Houston Rockets article that came out from The Athletic this week saying like the Rockets want to go big game hunting. Like Ime Udoka spent some time in Philly. Like Houston's always a place. They just went out and got Steven Adams. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Like that's always a place that gets mentioned as a hopeful Joel Embiid suitor, just like New York. Like there's definitely just some people suggesting that there's cause for concern looking at the long-term ramifications here. I don't have a real thought on that, but I figure just for the sake of conversation, Dan, do you have any thoughts on that matter?
Yeah, there's a few things. So first off, before we get super far away from it, Andrew Unterberger is also a contributor to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez. We can't bring up the whole world around there without saying the name. Need to make sure we do that.
Say the name.
Number two, it puts Daryl Morey in a pretty interesting position, right? You know, if there is optimism that it's not season ending and that you would be able to get Embiid back on the other side of the trade deadline, whatever that might be, you know, return to play after, and you mentioned Jeff Stotted in Street Clothes earlier, he's written about lateral meniscus tears and lateral meniscus injuries before, and return to play, his sort of evaluation of it is oftentimes, a lot of it depends on the location of the injury and what kind of treatment path they take. But if you're going to do the meniscectomy, the like sort of shaving off and the tear of the torn portion to rehabilitate it, the return to play is often quicker than going like full removal, but it can also have like longer term effects down the road. But maybe he's also been down this road before. And so maybe he's more willing to say like, yeah, we'll do the sort of shorter term thing. If you even need to do that, it remains to be seen what the path forward is in terms of treatment. So say that's 4 to 6 weeks or something like that. You're getting him back mid-March, still time to get ramped up for the playoffs. If Daryl Morey still looks at it and says, we think that even with a like less than 100% Embiid, this team still has a reasonable chance of winning the championship, then you would expect him to maintain that course that people have been sort of anticipating for basically since the James Harden trade of take these first round picks, take these expiring contracts, turn that into another contributor for this year's team to try to turn your 5 or 6% chance of winning the title into an 8 or 9 or 10% chance of winning a title. If you don't evaluate and yourself scout, if you think that a team with a less than full strength Embiid can't get you there, then I wonder if Daryl Morey would be more likely to say, I don't want to do anything that adds anything beyond this summer and like give myself as much flexibility and as keep my powder dry and as many options as possible to make those additions in trade this summer. We've talked a ton about the Sixers being able to position themselves as the rare team that is very good and will have max cap space and an opportunity to add. We've also talked about the list of targets for that max cap space winnowing and winnowing with every trade and every deal that seems to be coming down the pike. So what that means in terms of how Daryl would maneuver, I'm not so sure, but I do wonder if I think a lot's going to hinge on what the Sixers front office evaluates as its chances are with a less than full strength Embiid. I don't know if you can reasonably go forward here and say, we think that we're going to get him back in mid-March and he's going to be totally full bore, 100% the same guy he was at the start of the season. That seems like a dicey thing to bet on, but maybe that's what you have to bet on if this is where you are for the Sixers. And then in terms of the bigger question about Embiid, there's only two, I mean, since that first season where he tore his meniscus midway through in January, he's played in 75% or more of his games in four of six seasons. The only two where he fell below that were the COVID seasons, where it was shortened and where he got sick and where he was out for extent. There were other injuries as well, but where everybody missed more time than usual, essentially, during those two seasons.
Those damn protocols.
And, you know, for good reason. But the question, it's like a philosophical question. If the guy is around three quarters of the time, and during that three quarters of the time, he's better than
three
literally
quarters of the time. It works every time.
Yeah, right. He's Joel Embiid, Sex Panther. if that 75% of the time, he is better than literally everybody else on the planet, or yeah, with maybe one or two exceptions, is that worth whatever the cost is knowing that you are going to have to deal with that other quarter of the time. And like,
I'm raising my arm because 27 teams are going to be saying, ooh, me, pick me. I'll take that guy.
Yeah. And it's so
I agree.
But it's a, so like, what, you know, when the question is like, would this scare other teams off? Maybe. But if you want to compete at that level, you need the guy. They don't make very many guys at that level. There's a handful of them, maybe. And he's one of them. So yeah. All of which makes every turn and twist of the Sixers drama so much more compelling, because there is this all-timer at stake and his the narrative and the course of his career. But it also makes every part of it sort of more painful and harrowing. So I don't know. I mean, on a very basic level, it's a freaking bummer that we just cannot see him with a full clean bill of health for 8 straight months or 6 straight months or whatever. Because I don't know, you know, it could be something truly special if we did, but this is the business that we've chosen. This is where the Sixers find themselves again, and yeah. They're going to have to navigate it once again.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'll say to that is, look, we've talked about all the stuff going on in Milwaukee. Like, if you're New York, we're just speaking in hypotheticals here, and the Bucks were to fall apart in the second round or whatever, and all of a sudden Giannis is looking elsewhere, which we have discussed that doomsday scenario that is clearly governing all of these Bucks decision making. Like, if you're New York and you're in the position to decide, oh, should we go pursue Giannis or should we go pursue Joel Embiid? Then yeah, I could see this potentially being this ongoing dynamic potentially being something that like shifts a decision towards Giannis. But like, those are nice, you know, rich pickings to go to. I want to transition to the All-Star reserves, because I'll say this, if you want to continue to add some more sunshine or optimism, whatever, to this topic, whenever I know a player is hurt and out for a while, I've done this back to when the days where Mike Conley was like always nipping at the heels of being an All-Star selection. I just always weirdly root for the player who's hurt to get in the All-Star game, so that way multiple guys get the love.
No, I totally get this.
And now, and I hope Julius Randle has a speedy recovery. I hope Joel Embiid has a speedy recovery. We're going to get two more guys in the East who are going to get All-Star nods. So, Dan, before we do that, we'll run off who the people were anointed as by coaches. I was going to say people voted, but that's not what happened.
I really hope that coaches were not going around anointing with oils. Wasn't that a Mark Jackson story? Wasn't that one of the Mark Jackson stories that was like he tried to heal Steph Curry's ankles by anointing it with oils? I remember this.
Holy water, I think it was.
Yes, maybe it wasn't oils. In any event.
But it is funny. Like, I do know.
Try to keep the anointing to a minimum.
Yeah, I do know some coaching staffs like get together around a table, crack a beer, and have fun figuring it out. I don't know how everyone does it, but that's neither here nor there. East, Jaylen Brown, Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson. Really emotional moment with Alan Hahn. If you haven't seen that video, very, very cool, being that Brunson is always, it seems, focused on keeping a tough, non-emotionless, like almost Jalen Hurts-like exterior. If that
maybe analogy, it's a Jalen thing.
Maybe it's a Jalen thing. But to show a little emotion after a cool comeback win on a very big night against the Pacers, I would say, he got nominated, Tyrese Haliburton got picked in theory, like above him, just a cool moment for him to be showing that human element. Bam Adebayo, Julius Randle, Tyrese Maxey, Paolo Banchero. In the West, Devin Booker, Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and Karl Anthony Towns, which I will tell you surprised a lot of people around the league, even people in Minnesota who thought that people in Minnesota that I had spoken to dating back to like the showcase in December 15th was like, man, you think we could get three? Because like, we think Ant and Rudy are going to be locks. Like, we hope Cat can get in there. I think it was just not like Cat's not deserving of it. I just think people expected if the Wolves were going to get a second guy, it was going to be Rudy. So I'll start by saying, Dan, any surprises, any snubs? I know Ben Warbeck wrote a great article breaking that all down at Yahoo Sports. Go check that out. I have some thoughts on the East 2 replacement stuff, but I'm just going to tip it over to you.
Yeah, I think you're right. The only name that sort of caught my eye was Kat, and which is not any slight. I don't intend that as a slight to him. You look at the numbers and you're like, oh, right. He's averaging like 22, 9 and 3 assists on 52, 44, 87 shooting while playing his ass off for the number one
pretty
team
damn good.
In. Yeah, like and having like making the difficult adjustment to play in the four more often next to Rudy, like the thing that was such a challenge for them all last year. He's really bought into it and really is working his tail off to do it. And has been on like a, I mean, outside of the 62-point game, which we remember now is more like a meme for the loss and Chris Finch afterward. But he's like 26 a game on 670 true shooting in January. He's been awesome. But yeah, I think the point of Rudy is like the biggest reason for the biggest reason why Minnesota's good, that defense. And so I think everyone expected that. But Rudy Gobert not making an All-Star game is not, I don't know that we're going to be missing him going, you know, Globetrotters. I think it's going to be all right. I mean, the snub to me for the West, and I know Mike Brown has already called it, I think, like a glaring mistake, or that neither one of the Sacramento Kings guys got on there. I had De'Aaron Fox when I did my like the All-Star ballot, and then I picked the reserves on my fake team. I had De'Aaron Fox because the on-off splits for when he's on the court without Sabonis and when Sabonis is on the court without him, the Kings get outscored when Sabonis is on the court running things, and Fox, they were like a big plus, big positive numbers when Fox is on the court. So I was like, his scoring, his playmaking, his three-point shooting, improved defense, and he seems like he's driving their winning more. But Sabonis is like eighth in assists. He's leading the league in rebounding. He's eighth in assists. He's shooting 62% from the floor, and he has 13 triple-doubles, and he didn't get on the team. Like,
maybe the Kings should win the in-season tournament, and then you can get two guys in there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to me, that this is like the this is the closest that I've ever gotten for to stumping for like advance the roster, improve the roster sizes to 15, add more slots. But that's also I get why.
You know what will happen, right? If they do that, then all the old guys will be like, "Oh, that's a fake All-Star," because in my day there was only 12. Like I could just see.
I mean, they already do that. It's like, well, that guy was an injury replacement in a Down East fake All-Star. You know,
yeah.
So I mean, that stuff happens, and I get it. I mean, in any event, the Kings guys were the ones that I was like, that's going to generate the most heat in all likelihood. Ben, I got again, you want to point people to Ben's article, did a really nice job of illustrating his argument for Jamal Murray being the biggest snub. I thought that was he framed it really nicely. So I recommend people go check that out. But talk to me about the East, where you think the injury replacements are going. What do you think the conversation is going to focus on there?
I don't know where they're going. I mean, we'll see what the conversation it doesn't matter what the people think, because Adam Silver can just wave his wand and put anybody in there.
I think there's actual a little wand.
Oh yeah, he's a witch.
Or like a scepter.
I don't know if you knew that. Yeah, he brews potions up at Olympic Tower and then disseminates it across Manhattan like an evil mob villain.
NC Armada, do me a solid. Let's mock up some art for Adam Silver with a wand or a scepter or like I don't know, like the kind of staff that Loki has in the Avengers. Like I want to see what kind of like. What he's working with there. Give me some pitches. I want to see some blue sky solutioneering. I need 5 by 5 p.m. tonight. So let's hear it.
There you go. Deadline set. Submissions all
That's
are
right.
welcome. I would like Derek White to be in there. I like Derek White.
You
I
just want to
him.
Plug the story you wrote.
No, I just even like what was the game? It was the Pelicans game the other night. Like he had a terrible game and then he ends up hitting like 9, you know, 3 threes in the clutch and rebound.
Yeah, put them away in the fourth.
I think Derek White is always there for you. Just like what can Brown do for you? What can White do for you? He will do it. He will do it at all times.
We don't anybody clip out the phrase "What can White do for you?" Derek White would be the third Celtic, and that's a like the Celtics are head and shoulders above everybody else. They're like I think a 4-game lead in the East or 4.5 game lead in the East right now. You could understand that. That's a super defensible pick, and you know I joke about you wanting to just plug your piece, but you wrote a really nice story. You talked to Derek White about how the advanced stats love him and what that's capturing. I talked to Derek White's dad, who then has subsequently followed us on Twitter, which is very nice of him. There's certainly a great argument for it. He like unlocks the best version of the best team in the NBA. I think that's a justifiable pick. To me, if you're moving in that direction, I wonder if like my last pick on the wild cards was Scottie Barnes. Maybe if you're at the point where you're like, we're moving past just, we're going to reward the winners and we're going to get to like individual cases. Trae Young certainly is a name that goes there. And Ben wrote at some length about the case for Trae Young. Jimmy Butler is just like, he's a reputation play and he's been playing all much better of late. But the meme with Jimmy is always like, he doesn't really start playing until the All-Star break. And then he's an All-NBA player. So I don't know. There are some worthy considerations. But yeah, I think the East was a little bit easier. The West, there were more guys. And I said somebody responded to my ballot and was like, maybe the injury replacements should just come from the West. So yeah, maybe that's your answer. Sabonis and Fox both get in and the injury replacement spots in the East. And we just sort of swap everybody over. I mean, Sabonis already played in Indiana. He's probably got like a home color jersey anyway. So done and dusted. Let's do that.
I don't want to go too in depth on Memphis trading Steven Adams to Houston for 3 second-round picks, but just a couple of thoughts.
Sure.
I mean, we had written about it that the Rockets have been looking at various types of upgrades of Victor Oladipo's salary. And I ended up not choosing this path before the trade even went down. But in thinking about how to write potential article, maybe I'm giving something away to the competitors. I was thinking about writing something, and maybe I'll do this sometime next week, of like things we know will happen. Because there's a ton of, oh, this team's looking at this guy and this guy's up for sale and here's the price. But a lot of those things just won't get done. Like,
right.
I always say about, if we're looking at this through the lens of elementary school quizzes, like the trade deadline is column A and column B, where there are some extras along the way. You'll end up drawing some lines, but there aren't going to be every single thing on the left and every right. single thing on the right connected, versus like the draft. There's 1 through 60, man. Someone's getting picked at every slot. So Victor Oladipo was 100% going to get traded because the Rockets already traded 2 second-round picks plus Kevin Porter Jr.'s salary to get Oladipo's salary to do something else with it. Originally, it seemed like the Rockets were trying to get help for this year because Ime Udoka's in, the defense is bruising and defending and locking down all comers, and they have many reasons to try to actually make the play-in tournament and advance this rebuild a real step further ahead from just like 3 years of kind of chasing their own tail and running in mud. So when it first came out and we had talked about them looking at Robert Williams in Portland, where he, of course, has a connection to Ime Udoka and a lot of the Celtics coaches that former Celtics coaches that Ime Udoka brought with him down to Houston. So that through line, getting Steven Adams, who I think is arguably better than Robert Williams, while out for the year, has much less of a daunting injury history. Like, totally get it. He's going to be very helpful for them next season. I just was a little surprised that this happened now. This seems like a deal that a lot of people around the league would have thought could happen at 2:57 p.m. Eastern time, because Memphis is definitely going to I don't know how much they will continue to be looking to find more financial flexibility moving forward for this offseason and free agency and the draft, being that, I mean, you know, when Marcus Gasol and Mike Conley got hurt, like flashing back when, the Grizzlies have always been very opportunistic. They're not celebrating what's happening, but I think they've been very opportunistic and like aggressive and figuring out ways how to make lemons out of this, or make lemonade out of the lemons that they've been dealt here. They figured out some stuff with Vince Williams, as you talked about, on Divine Intervention, which I'm sure I'll get the invite at some point.
It's for sure coming.
And yeah, I just think that, I mean, Jock Landale and Oladipo's salary together would have allowed Houston to go bigger game hunting. And like, if you think this might be an indictment on Jock Landale, like, I will say, yeah, there has not been a lot of excitement about what his contributions have been to the Rockets front court after giving him a very creative 4-year, $32 million deal that is super non-guaranteed. So look, there's like opportunity for them, just like with Evan Fournier's salary in New York, to pick up options moving forward and have it continue to be an expiring contract that can have non-guaranteed stuff in the future. I haven't made any calls yet directly about this. I'm wondering if this means like the Rockets are done, or if they're going to continue to keep looking at other things, because Memphis, I think, still will be open to doing things. I wrote about it today. Xavier Tillman might have a wider market than any other player in the NBA right now, just being that
it's wild.
Let's think about the mathematics of it all. He's very serviceable, and I think his representation, he's with Mark Bartlestein and Priority Sports, you know, one of the most highly regarded agencies in the league. I don't think they're pounding the table trying to get Xavier Tillman, Jakob Poeltl money. You know, I think he's extension eligible right now. So to get like for a team that's not going to have cap space next summer to acquire him now as a real rotation piece moving forward for maybe, I mean, just pulling a number, like the most closest analog I would expect to be like a comparison for what his contract would be is what Nick Richards' deal is like in Charlotte, that 3-year 15. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less. I have no idea what the numbers are supposed to be, but it's not going to be pushing mid-level type salary that, sure, you know, the elite backup big men tend to, the Isaiah Hartenstein, $11 million, whatever he makes in that range. So I don't know if Memphis is done. However, like Marcus Smart, I've been told emphatically not available, despite, you know, I left his name out of the first article we wrote about Milwaukee and the Adrian Griffin stuff, just because I hadn't really dotted all my I's and crossed all my T's about it. But Marcus Smart, you can throw him on the list of players that Milwaukee was trying to see what their 35th pick, Pat Connaughton campaign, Bobby Portis package could ultimately get. The Lakers definitely checked on Marcus Smart to, it would be really interesting to see him and LeBron play on the same team after all those years, which has been a whole story that I definitely wrote for Sports Illustrated years ago about LeBron always adopting former playoff rivals into his teams. So, but yeah, Marcus Smart, I've been told pretty definitively he is not for sale. So that's my quick breakdown there. Dan, anything from you?
Just the, it, you and I spoke last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, about if you want the thing to happen, go make the thing happen. You don't necessarily need to try to maximize the value on it by waiting longer to, you know, get your guy or get the deal done that puts you in the position you want to get into. For Memphis doing it now, this sheds a bunch of money off their books for next year. They were already going to be well over the luxury tax line, flirting with the second apron. Moving off of Adams now gives them some breathing room, gives them an opportunity to kind of figure out, all right, do we want to keep Luke Kennard around, or do we want to see if we can move him for something? Do we want to waive? Now we have Victor Oladipo expiring money. Do we want to waive him now so we can convert GG Jackson to a full, you know, a full contract as opposed to a two-way? You know, gives them more flexibility to decide what they want to do. And it doesn't surprise me that they are not entertaining Smart anymore, because they really didn't get a chance to see what their team, the team that they thought they were going to build, would look like. And so now you get to go into next year and say, all right, the core is Ja, Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart. We bring, you know, get a hopefully healthy Brandon Clark back next year. You bring Vince Williams in, and, you know, whatever you're going to get out of your hopefully like mid to high lottery pick. And that's what we're starting with. And then we have a little bit of financial flexibility, including the big $12.6 million trade exception they get from this, because they send out, they're able to slide Oladipo's money into the disabled player exception that they got for Ja Morant. And so they don't take any money back in effect, which then creates a big traded player exception for the money that they get off of for Adam. So now you can go hunting for, like you said, mid-level exception money type help, another rotation player that would cost $11, $12 million. And, you know, then you're putting together more of like a top seven, top eight that could then go back and try to compete for the top of the West again. So makes sense to me that this is sort of where Memphis is rearranging its deck chairs. As far as the Houston side of it, I think that they've, since they got Ime Udoka, the goal has been, let's get grownups in here who play defense and are like badasses. Let's get Fred VanVleet. Let's get Dylan Brooks. Let's get a hard-nosed, respected vet, Jeff Green. Let's try to get these guys that are tough and that are NBA grownups. And Steven Adams has been on really good teams that have competed at really high levels for a really long time. And he does not care about his own stuff at all. Like, I will box out. I will create the runway for you to go grab the rebound. I will attack the offensive glass like crazy, which is something Udoka's team in Boston, that 1 year there, they were like a top 10 offensive rebounding team. And this Houston team is not that. So I wonder if that's a component, like part of the identity we want to bring there.
The Rockets, and just like, not to interrupt you, but obviously I'm interrupting you. The Rockets definitely have discussed the idea of like, oh, Could we put Alpi next to a center who's more of a defensive hub? Does that dirty work stuff like you're saying?
Yeah.
Like they did with Robert Williams and Al Horford playing together in Boston, and as they're still doing with Porzingis and Al and Luke Garnett.
Yeah.
So I think they could play together. I think they could do opposite, you know, lineup things to anchor each thing. I don't know. There's a lot of opportunity to utilize both.
Yeah. So the sunny side up version of this, the optimistic version of it, is Adams comes back fully healthy and is able to have that kind of impact next to Şengün, behind Şengün, whatever. And he is a rising tide kind of player, like doesn't need very much, but has a big impact and could really help the guards with the way he sets screens, all that stuff. The downside, or the con version of this, the glass half empty side, is it doesn't work out. He's an expiring contract next year. That helps us again, you know, as Memphis is clearing up its books, figuring out what it needs to do. You're going to have Şengün and Jalen Green extension eligible. You got Tari Eason extension eligible the year after that. I think Jabari Smith Jr. also extension eligible this summer. Fred VanVleet's got a huge player club option in 2 years. So like the bills are going to start coming due for this Houston rebuild pretty soon. So moving off of an extra $12, $13 million might help you figure out how to maneuver things around as the Rockets try to continue to build something competitive. So like it seems like a low risk, potential high reward deal on both sides of it. And maybe that's about all that we need to say about it.
There you go. Yeah. The Lakers and LeBron, as we just alluded to with the Marcus Smart stuff, they are searching for upgrades, and we are searching for reasons behind what LeBron meant with the hourglass emoji. Brian Windhorst just put out a story live as a recording, quoting Rich Paul, saying he is not being traded. He is not asking for a trade, despite the hourglass emoji tweet, despite some random dude whose Twitter account got highlighted. Dan's stopping me.
Show respect. David Pingelor was one of the early guys saying LeBron to the Heat in 2010. That is an old time, I want to say like Miami TV guy. So not just a random guy.
All right. I'm doing the Shaq meme. I'm unfamiliar with your work.
Familiar with your game. Oh, and now, sorry, super producer John Gennaro, let's just note, now an LA TV guy. So this is where the benefit of my age helps. I remember some stuff.
Oh, so your memory is getting better as you become more senile.
I'm not senile yet. I just look this. I look terrible, but I'm not senile yet.
So, yeah, I mean, the hourglass stuff also brings me back fond memories of figuring out Paul Pierce's what happened with his JPEG thing during all the Blake Griffin stuff. And then I remember, then I saw this week that Paul's Twitter profile picture, I don't know if you saw this, is a screenshot of his lock screen. Like it has the time in it. So just shout out Paul Pierce. But yeah.
You're talking about fond memories related to this stuff. I have literally been trying to decipher LeBron James tweets and Instagram activity for 8 years. February 2015. I looked it up this morning. That was when there was the "You just need to stop trying to fit out and just fit in and be part of something special," where LeBron was going at, like, cryptically going at Kevin Love and then telling Jason Lloyd and Dave McMenamin, "No, it's not about anybody in particular." And then when all the other reporters left going, "It's not a coincidence, guys. No coincidences here. I know what I'm saying." And they're just being like, "What do I write about this?" And you know, from that to like Bitmoji Batman and mirror selfies. I've been writing about this kind of stuff. I don't have to do it as much anymore, but I have been doing this for literally two presidential administrations. And it's you know, you could set your watch to it. We're at cryptic LeBron time. So yeah, maybe the hourglass doesn't mean that LeBron's time in LA is up, but it certainly could mean that it's time for something to happen in Los Angeles, because you're 50 games in, you're 500, and the West is only running away from you.
But he said after the loss to the Hawks, I think that was Tuesday night, whenever it was earlier this week, before Thursday night's game in Boston, he said, "I don't have any message for my teammates. Just go out and do your job." Then the Lakers PR, someone from Lakers PR cut LeBron off, ended the scrum. LeBron said, "Way to cut me off, because I was about to go in." So
I have no messages for my teammates except for all these messages I was about to send before you cut me off.
And I guess whether he transmitted it mentally or through secret emojis or what have you, the Lakers did the damn thing in Boston, beating the Celtics on their home court, which I was wondering when the record or the undefeated stance would fall. And now Boston's dropped 2 at home. So are the Celtics so mighty in TD Garden? Who's to say? But Austin Reeves, 32, 7 threes, including some audacious ones. And we got D'Lo with the almost with a Lakers career high, 14 assists, excuse me, one off of his career high. Jackson Hayes had no fouls in 34 minutes, which if you
that's got to be a record.
I think it must be. Career high of minutes per foul, minutes without fouls for Jackson Hayes, which if you're someone affiliated with the New Orleans Pelicans, you will definitely give a nice chuckle at. Downside, Jared Vanderbilt left the game with a non-contact right foot ankle injury. X-rays are negative, which is good because someone texted me last night. I was not watching the game. I was having dinner. Someone texted me, oh, did Jared Vanderbilt tear his Achilles? I was like, what? And then fortunately, things are looking okay there. So they're ninth in the West. They're clearly looking. They're clearly looking for stuff. D'Angelo Russell has, of course, gone the fuck off ever since his name's been bandied about everywhere, which is funny because I remember I was in OKC last December for like a long Thunder homestand where they had a bunch of fun games. And I talked to D'Lo first for an Anthony Edwards story as a secondary voice for that. And I said, by the way, man, like your name's out there. How do you feel about that? And he basically said, like, if you don't fuck with me, I don't fuck with you. So go back and look at that. D'Angelo Russell, Yahoo Sports, Jake Fisher, trade Minnesota. It's there. And he ended up, of course, getting traded. So I don't know where his trade stuff stands. I have been told, you know, that there was this very much reported three-team idea where DeJounte Murray would go to L.A., D'Angelo Russell, Jalen Hood-Schifino, the rookie, and 2029 pick plus a swap could potentially go to Atlanta. And then they would need a third team to take back D'Angelo Russell's salary. I haven't been able to pin down a team that's pining for D'Angelo Russell. But
well, we can say specifically that we know that Hawks fans are not particularly enamored of the idea when he stepped to the free throw line at State Farm Arena and they said, they chanted, "We don't want you," which like you expect some harsh stuff from the road, when you're the visitor, you understand
chant.
That. But that's gotta, like, I don't know. No matter what, no matter how thick a skin you develop as a pro athlete, like, that's still gotta hurt. I felt for D'Angelo Russell in that moment.
One person
in my house. If one child in my house says, "I don't want you," I feel very, very hurt by that. Let alone 18,000 people booming from the rafters down at me. No good.
So I don't know. The Hawks, I've been told, are like confident that they would be able to find a team to send D'Angelo Russell to. So maybe that's not such a big an issue. However, one thing I think is kind of new that I put in today's notebook as well, I've definitely been hearing now that Gabe Vincent is a name that the Lakers are putting in outgoing trade concepts, which for the longest time it was like, hey, you can't judge us until Gabe Vincent's back. So maybe he won't ever be back because maybe he'll be out the door. So we'll see what happens. I have heard a couple of things, which I will sum by saying, sounds like some of the ideas the Lakers are looking to put him in for are just bringing him back for an expiring salary, which, you know, in theory, if you want to keep drawing the direct line to Atlanta, the Hawks don't want future salary, but a lot of teams don't want future salary in these ever stringent tax landscapes that are coming around the horizon, even more stringent as the calendar flips to 24-25 than they are this year. So I don't know where they're trying to go. Clearly, they're looking at backcourt names like Tyus Jones and Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon and Bruce Brown. Them and the Knicks continue to be the two teams. I didn't write this today because it looks like not new. They're the only two teams I continue to hear for Bruce Brown. So I'm sure there's others out there, but
I want to get back to that. I'll get back to Bruce Brown later. But the first off, we were among the many people who were like, Lakers, really nice offseason. Good stuff, the way those moves worked out. I think if we would have known that Gabe Vincent was going to play 127 minutes, we might have had a little bit of a dimmer view of that signing. Yeah, like just absolutely has not even gotten an opportunity to get on the floor. And that has been a big problem. You're mentioning a lot of guards in association with the Lakers. And that makes a ton of sense because it's the offense, man. Like they have to find some level of offensive juice. Like they are bottom 10 in points scored per possession and turnover rate, offensive rebounding and second chance points, which becomes an even bigger problem if Vanderbilt is going to be out of the lineup for any extended period of time. They're bottom 10 in 3-point attempt rate and the share their baskets that are unassisted. Like they are just, they don't have much shot creation or much shot making. They need somebody else to be able to do that. They were hoping that that was going to be Austin Reeves' big step forward. He has regulated somewhat since that frosty start. Obviously, as you mentioned, D'Lo has gone off since it became an opportunity. Like, oh, let's get him out of here because he's not doing it. He has started doing it at a higher level. It hasn't really necessarily translated to team success. And one of the reasons, this is sort of the quieter thing that's been a problem with them. Since the end of the in-season tournament, they're a bottom 10 defense too. And so that's like for this Lakers formula to work, it's got to be they're awesome on defense because they're huge and they're smothering and AD is blotting out the sun and LeBron is rotating and picking off passes and whatever. And that's getting them out in transition. And they've not been good on defense for about 2 months. And that's like, if you're a bad defense or slightly below average defense and a bad or slightly below average offense, then where do you find yourself at 25-25 in ninth place? You know, and by these projection models, I look at this stuff a lot because I try to get a sense of what the smart computers are saying in addition to what I'm seeing and what I'm writing and what I'm reading. Basketball References projections have them finishing 11th. ESPN's BPI, the Basketball Power Index, and Dunks and Threes have them finishing 9th. In Predictable, Mike Bowie's stuff over there and In Predictable has them at like a 60-40 proposition to make the play-in. This is a coin flip team right now at best. So if they don't find another answer to boost that offense and to stabilize and or to stabilize that defense, one or the other, ideally both, you are talking about at best a chance of maybe getting into the 9-10 seed. And that is not what anybody signed up for this, you know, this iteration of the Lakers. But this is where they find themselves. It has not been good enough, even with LeBron and AD missing only a combined 10 games. Like, it's just there isn't enough juice and there needs to be another answer, whether that's inside the house or from outside.
It'd be sweet if the Lakers could get Jalen Brunson, but he is not for sale. He is the number one boy of all of New York City. He went for 40 last night to drag the Knicks to a comeback win over the Indiana Pacers. As we were saying earlier, the night he got named an All-Star reserve, Dan wrote an awesome piece about the jaw-dropping rise of Jalen Brunson into the NBA superstar that nobody saw coming. And it was a really smart take, just being that so many of the conversations I have around this time of year are absolutely looking forward to what can we do now in consideration with the offseason upcoming, especially being that, as we've been talking about with guys down the totem pole like Xavier Tillman, there's just not such a robust free agent market anymore. I mean, besides Jalen Brunson and Fred VanVleet changing teams in the last couple of years, the last guys to do it before that were Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and then Kawhi Leonard. Paul George didn't even go to the Clippers by free agency. It was a trade. And Kawhi, by all accounts, only went to LA, the Clippers, or the nail that put it over the top, whatever the analogy is, was because they could add Paul George. So right. that's like a 0.5 addition to me, because like his free agency, where he did take some meetings, was in theory decided by a trade. So just super rare nowadays that someone this good would actually reach the open market. And then he has exploded even beyond everyone's wildest imaginations besides Rick Brunson himself.
Right.
And probably a couple people in his corner. I mean, there's
Leon Rose, Tom Thibodeau.
For sure. I still think if you injected True Serum in Tom Thibodeau and anyone up top making decisions in New York, they wouldn't say they thought he'd be this good, because the logic that the messaging out of MSG throughout all the Donovan Mitchell trade stuff was that we still need a number A guy, or a number A, a letter A, number one option guy to move this thing truly into championship contention. With Donovan, they didn't want to put all the picks and all the players in that deal because they wanted to save more to go get someone else even bigger than Donovan while they already had Jalen. So I think all those clues indicate that they never thought he'd be averaging 30 and being a easy 40-point threat every single night where you can't count him out after he's getting punched in the face with 2 minutes to go. Yeah. I mean, shout out Jalen Brunson, man. Especially like that dude struggled in Manila, had a tough time, the point where I was definitely like feeling bad for him on a human to human level. And he just has, I mean, the NBA game is so much different. He is so terrific at getting to the paint and drawing fouls. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going to stop talking because you wrote about the guy.
Well, first I'll just direct everybody. Yeah, go read the thing. I wrote it and I really like it. And then because I got lucky and I wrote about him on the Thursday, the idea of writing about him on the Thursday was they're going to announce All-Star reserves later. I have a pretty good sense that he's going to be one of them. This would be a lead into that. And then not only is he announced as a reserve, but he has a monster game that's like in the way that Madison Square Garden games can get like can become like revivals or become, you know, like there's like everybody's catching the Holy Ghost in the stands, like the whole building sort of shakes and warms up. And that was we talked about anointing earlier. That felt like an anointing of a star, that moment. And he was, as you mentioned, overcome with emotion. He had no words for what to say about the feeling of arriving at that moment. And doing it at Madison Square Garden in front of that fan base that was saluting him so much. It worked out so well that they made a really nice piece of art to go with it, and they're going to run it again today. So if you, it's available at Yahoo Sports NBA, go check it out. The thing to me is the people that have criticized or not criticized, but have raised the critique of he's not a real 1A or he can't be a real 1A in the postseason because he is a, you know, generously listed 6'1 or 6'2 point guard, and teams will throw length at him. They will throw traps at him. They will force other members of the Knicks to make plays. And he can't just sort of overwhelm that in the way that a Kevin Durant can, or a Giannis can, or a LeBron can, or a Jokic can, or whoever. That Steph can just render that stuff immaterial with shooting, all that kind of stuff. And that is a rarefied air that we're talking about five or six guys like in the last decade or plus of the league. I get that. But he has elevated himself into, like, you talk about letters and numbers, like all NBA, like, the number might be like second team, maybe, depending on how the rest of the season goes. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility for Jalen Brunson to be an all NBA on the all NBA team this year. And to be there on a declining contract that pays him less than 20% of the salary cap for like a top 15, 20 guy in the league right now is an outcome that I don't think that anybody in their wildest dreams could have really anticipated a couple of summers ago, no matter how hard the Knicks wanted to go after him. And that was very clear and very evident very early. But they are now down. Like, OG Anunoby hasn't played the last couple of games. As you mentioned, Randall out with a dislocated shoulder and remains to be seen. He's not even going to get reevaluated for 2 or 3 weeks. They're starting Isaiah Hartenstein and Precious Achiuwa together in the front court. They go seven deep last night. Like, they are not, there's not a whole lot in the cupboard right now. And Brunson is just rendering all that immaterial, like 30-7 on 6-16 or 6-12 true shooting since the beginning of January. Moving on from Barrett and Emmanuel quickly created like a playmaking void. And he has just been like, I will do more. And he's doing it at not MVP levels. Those are not the letters that I'm going to start using. But when you start, looking at who is producing points, assists, shooting efficiency and avoiding turnovers, it's kind of like Brunson and SGA and not very many other guys. So that's the level he's playing at right now. And it's been something of a revelation in New York. And yeah, I mean, it's cool to watch. That moment was incredible to see last night. And now it's a matter of, how long he can keep that going. And if the Knicks who are now very much in position, like they're within arm's reach of the number two seed in the East right now, as the Bucks are still figuring things out with Doc Rivers, as the Sixers are dealing with Embiid's injury, like the Pacers are dealing with Halliburton's injury and onboarding Pascal Siakam, yada, yada, yada. Like, the second seed in the East might be there for the taking, and the Knicks are certainly looking like they're prepared to, or at least want to throw their hat in the ring for it.
Yeah. To your point, like, I don't know why the Knicks really do need to go out and get a Bruce Brown or a DeJounte Murray that they continue to be linked to, because I don't want to, this is me segueing out. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Because we gotta get out of here. But like, I think that the fact that he is going to keep doing this, he's going to play, if not 48, 44, 46 minutes in the playoffs, like we've talked about. So I wonder what the Knicks' appetite truly will be to go get backcourt reinforcements. of that higher degree when like you can get Alec Burks for 2 seconds or a much lower price point for Jordan Clarkson than it would be for Bruce Brown or DeJounte Murray, because this dude is that fucking good and because he's going to be playing until his arms fall off and his shoes lose the tread on their tracks, because Tom Thibodeau will happily play him every single minute as long as he wants to.
It's a very quick two-pronged response to it. One is that if you can turn the Fournier salary and some, you know, a small amount of draft capital into Bruce Brown, that contract, again, they can, you know, as you mentioned earlier, that's the kind of contract you can do the same thing with, guarantee the team option for next year, still use it as a trade chip. And then the second part is like, the Knicks at this point, make the whole plane out of just dogs. Like, get as many guys that are just dog mentality dudes in there as possible. Yeah, maybe the minutes cannibalize one another a little bit. Like, he's sort of samey to DiVincenzo. He's sort of samey to Josh Hart, whatever. I kind of get the sense that playing against a nonstop churn of those guys would be a real pain in the ass for an opponent in the playoffs.
A hockey line shift.
And that can guard like 3 or 4 positions and, you know, do multiple things whenever you need it to. Like, surround Brunson with dogs feels like a pretty good recipe. So if the Knicks don't do anything, totally fine by that. But if they do something, I'm getting increasingly into that idea. It's got like a future component, like a salary smart component. And then also like make this team as unpleasant as possible to play against feels like an idea whose time has come. But you're right. We do need to keep moving.
There you go. So to wrap this thing up, I just want to say I'm really trying not to make this about myself, but it's been a wild response to my story from Wednesday about Tony Snell's mission to get back into the NBA, where I want to get into some like real context to explain, because, you know, well, let's just throw the TNT sound first, and we'll go from there.
You know what I want to say?
Why can't do it?
I read an article yesterday. Tony Snell?
Yeah. Needing to be signed?
By the end of this week, because he's got 2 kids with autism, and he needs to play to the end of the year to get a 10-year medical.
Right.
To help him take care of his 2 autistic kids. I'm hoping, you know, man, the NBA has been great to all of us sitting up here, you know, and you guys are going to be playing basketball forever, making gazillion dollars. I hope one of you guys sign Tony so his 2 autistic kids can get great medical care. I read that article.
Or is the league just, well, Adam Silver comes in and it makes an exception and he gets the.
It's only
40 games. So he can make.
I'm just telling you.
That's an easier way.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I hope a team signs him for the rest of the season, because, you know, I don't know a lot about autism. I'm not going to say that. But, man, I know it's got to be expensive to have 2 young kids with that situation. So I'm hoping the NBA, we always talk about what a family we are.
Right.
Let's sign that kid for the rest of the season.
So, first of all, from a personal state, never had a story talked about on TNT. So that's very, very cool. Although there's definitely like some James Harden stuff, but this is much different.
Shouts out to Charles Barkley and the team at Inside the NBA for bringing that story to light. That was really, really very cool to see.
Very cool. And very cool to see all the droves of people who have understood what this story is about. And like, to me, the goal of covering sports has like the most utmost goal, like the galaxy brain goal, the galaxy heart goal, where journalism is supposed to be always governed by empathy, is to use sports as a vehicle to discuss issues that impact people on a much greater scale. So the fact that this story has led to a ton of stuff that I've seen on Twitter talking about just like greater universal healthcare situations and whatnot, super, and like bringing more awareness to the challenges. I mean, I did not know how crazy it is. I mean, families can wait up to 3 years to get their children tested and evaluated for autism, where, and I don't think I said that. So let's just double. Tony Snell has 2 sons, 3 and 2, Carter and Kenzo, 3 years old, 2 years old, who were both diagnosed with autism, where that process made Tony himself, and this came out on the Today Show this summer, but for those who aren't familiar, that process made Tony himself get evaluated, and he found out at 31 years old after a full-fledged NBA career that he himself is on the spectrum with autism. So the fact that there are all these challenges that come with that, and like the first 18 to 36 months of a child's life who deals with that circumstance, what I've learned is it's the most critical time for neurodevelopmental stuff for children to get speech therapies and other therapies in order to like set them up to have as normal functioning, as close to as successful a life as they can have. So that's really what the goal of the story was to do, to further advocate for improvements in that whole area, which is what Tony Snell's foundation is trying to do. But I think a lot of this stuff got a little bit misconstrued because it is a little wonky. And I just want to do some clarifications here, because even like in that clip, you heard Kenny Smith say, someone give him a 10-day. I've been told since the story came out, multiple teams would be willing to give Tony Snell a 10-day if that were to help him here, which is amazing in its own right. Unfortunately, a 10-day contract, all you have to do is serve one day on an NBA roster to count in the eyes of the NBA to be a year of service. But this is very wonky in that this is specifically to qualify for the retiree benefits program that the NBA Players Association gives. So it actually, you need to be on a roster by February 2nd. That is what has been determined, basically the midway point of the year, or at least 41 games. So to clarify also, Tony Snell already has retiree benefits. You get a first healthcare plan that's going to set you up for life as an NBA player when you get to 3 years of service. And a lot of this stuff could have put in the article, but like didn't want to bog down the flow. And also, we're always trying to think about ways to save information and context for the pod. So just to add why all this stuff wasn't in there. And so then at 7 years, you get like an even better program with a great pension and benefits and low deductibles and all that type of stuff. To get to 10 years is when all of that then also includes your whole family for life.
Right.
Which is a huge, huge benefit, very costly benefit. One that is written in the bylaws, whether it's the CBA or whatever it is, I don't know 100% where it's written, but like that is a legal binding contract that applies to the entire union. So as heartfelt and beautiful and amazing it is that Charles Barkley is going on national TV saying the NBA needs to do something, like truly the NBA or the union can't. It's like truly illegal to be circumventing the written bargain negotiated stuff, whether it's just in the union or whether it's a thing agreed with the NBA. I don't know, but I know for sure that like the union could get sued by anyone who all like Elfrid Payton right now is playing for the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. He's on 9 years of service. I've been told Damian Wilkins, who to, again, not continue to make this about me, but he was the first NBA player I ever interviewed. Shout out Damian Wilkins. He played 40 games, was one game away from what would have been his 10th year of service to get that full family medical health plan. So if you're going to just switch this, not only would it just open up Pandora's box, it would be a whole other can of worms of potential legality stuff that like isn't going to work. Now, the positives here, just to bring this with a sunshiny end, as we've been bringing sunshine throughout the show, Tony does have, I don't know the numbers, I don't want to speak for him, he does have a good bit of money in the healthcare reimbursement account, which got some negative attention, that aspect of the retiree benefits program, when those players ended up going to jail and getting in court for using that for very nefarious reasons. We're not going to continue to add that here. But Tony has a good amount in there, which he can use to pay the difference of the premiums in order to get that insurance to cover his family. That's one option he can do. Plus, I am personally hoping that maybe all this attention and everything that's come up will allow a team to think about this for the start of next season, because right now he has to have a standard contract by today. I mean, before this comes out, I don't know when the exact deadline of today is, whether it's 6 p.m. or whatever. He needs to have a full standard contract for the rest of the season. It can't just be a 10-day because of that medical
line of half the year or 41 games. So it's past the 41 games mark for pretty much every team now. I was even thinking like, oh, if you've got all these multiple teams that are interested in giving a 10-day, could he just keep stacking 10 days for the rest to make it happen? But it's past that deadline.
No, it would need to be a rest of the season deal with one of those teams.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, we've got plenty of roster spots. You know, Udonis Haslem didn't play for 7 years in Miami. I saw a lot of people talking about Thanasis. If Thanasis can have a spot in Milwaukee, so
we don't need to make comparison into a reason to slander anyone else. But
exactly. Yeah,
I think your point is generally well taken. Like, well, first off, I loved that you were able to get. You were able to make Tony and his family feel comfortable enough to share this story, because I would imagine that a lot of it is kind of difficult to talk about and sensitive and challenging to put your family out there and make yourself vulnerable in that way, and that he felt comfortable enough with you to do it. I know you don't want to make it about you. I'm going to make it a little bit about you. I think that I was very happy to see that you were able to make that happen, and that
the
response to the story has been so overwhelmingly positive. There have been some people that have responded to it with a colder view, a more jaundiced view of like, this is not something that anybody else should be responsible for. He made his money. I get that. But this is when you're talking about what the possibilities are for the best possible care for children. Like you hope for the best outcome that you can arrive at. And it seems clear that in this case, the best outcome that can be arrived at for those kids is Tony Snell to be on an NBA roster for either the rest of this season, or as you mentioned, just, you know, the start of next season to accrue that service time. So this is not the kind of story I expected us to be reporting about and for you to be reporting in the run up to the trade deadline. And I'm so thrilled that this isn't something that just fell through the cracks in the course of trying to figure out who's moving a second round pick somewhere. Like some of these we're writing at the end of the day, as you mentioned, these are stories about people, not just assets on a spreadsheet. And Tony Snell and his kids are not assets on a spreadsheet. And here's hoping that the resolution to this is something that recognizes their full humanity and is able to, you know, able to point all of that in a more positive direction.
Yeah. One last thing on the humanity aspect. So I talked to Tony for two separate 30-minute conversations. The first was just like getting to know the guy and picking his brain before we really got into the nitty gritty. And I mean, his family's in Orlando right now. So he gave me this great quote that I just didn't fit in. It was like, they know Papa's working on something big. So that was very sweet. He also like used to be such a video gamer guy. Like that's what he would do on the road when he was playing for the Bucks and the Bulls and everyone else. And he has now dropped video games. He has become an avid chess player after watching Queen's Gambit. He has four people he routinely plays chess with on every day on the chess.com app. And he has started a book club with his wife where they read books together to help bridge their distance. And he loves unsolved mysteries. The first one they read is called One of Us is Lying, which became a big Netflix program.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're now reading The Silent Patient by Alex Michaelis, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So just like a super sweet man who is trying to always better himself, better his mind, better his family. And the best quote that he gave me about all that stuff was, I just love the feeling of reading stories and having my own movie in my head, which I thought was just a beautiful way to talk about reading. So shout out Tony Snell, man.
Shout out to the entire family, man. We're hoping for the best outcome here for all of y'all.
Yeah. The fact that like Aaron Gordon just tweeted about it, someone texted me and I saw someone change their Twitter, like just a random person change their name to like hire Tony Snell. It's just kind of crazy. I mean, someone literally just texted me right now as I picked up my phone that I started a movement, which I'm not saying I did that, but just like, it's crazy to see how widespread it is. We're ending this conversation. Shout out Tony Snell. Thanks everyone for reading and supporting. And thank you for listening to No Cap Room today on the Ball Don't Lie podcast network. That's all we've got. Thanks to super producer John Gennaro, who does all the things to make this show look and sound great. Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on and leave us a 5-star review. We thank you for listening and we'd appreciate it if you came back again next week for another episode of No Cap Room.